fact, joining us down the South Street Burger guest hotline, friend of the program. It's been a while since we've chatted, but happy to have him on, especially because he just released his newest book. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. But joining us is the author of Hockey Abstract, Stat Shot, also a columnist for ESPN and NHL.com, our friend Rob Volman. Happy Tuesday, Rob.
Happy Tuesday, right back at you. It's a nice one.
Now, I wanted to have you on yesterday, but you couldn't come on. Tell us why.
A friend of mine was having an eclipse party, so we all went over and watched the eclipse and tuned into the coverage of the eclipse across North America, and we had a great time.
Now, what exactly happens at an eclipse party? Pat Steinberg threw it out there yesterday that it might be similar to a full moon party, but I'm not sure he was really grasping the concept of an eclipse party. So what went on?
Well, there's not a whole lot to it. I mean, we had some telescopes and we had various other filters and people had special cameras, and we basically just took a look at the eclipse at various times and tried to get some good images of it, and of course tuned in to the even better images and coverage when you're actually on the path. So it was a lot of fun.
Now, you didn't stare straight at the eclipse, did you? I'm told that's a no-no.
No, and we were also very careful with the filters as well, making sure we're using the right ones and they were firmly in place every time we took a look.
All right, good stuff. Enough about the eclipse. Back to where we belong, and that's talking hockey. When you look at sportsnet.ca, you'll find NHL offseason power rankings. Who's improved the most so far? And number one on that list, the local hockey heroes, as Rob Kerr likes to say, the Calgary Flames. Your thoughts on the work that Brad Treloving's done so far in the offseason?
Well, I'm not sure that was I'm not sure I agree with that assessment. I would certainly agree that the Flames have made an improvement, but I think, at the most, it was just an incremental one, a very minor one. And, of course, a lot of it depends on how the goaltending, holds up. And that's very unpredictable. Like, whether you use numbers like me or whether you use the eye test, whatever you lean on, I think it'd be very hard to state with confidence that this goaltending tandem is going to be a hit. I think they're taking just as big a risk as they always have. And as far as other aspects of the blue line, other aspects of the team, obviously they've made some changes on the blue line, but they're also hoping for a bounce back season from players like Hamonic and Stone. These are players that are coming off some pretty bad seasons. So I don't think it's as obvious that the Flames have made an improvement versus, some other teams, like you mentioned, the Dallas Stars.
We'll start in goal. They've got a new tandem again. This time it is Mike Smith and Eddie Lack. When you look at these two players and at their underlying numbers, what do they tell you? Do they tell you a story?
Well, my first reaction when I first took a look at Mike Smith and Eddie Lack is, of course, it struck me that their numbers over the past few seasons are, below average. In fact, fairly close to the bottom end of the league when it comes to the NHL's 62 goalies at any given time. However, I dug a little bit deeper, and I took a look at some of the versions of save percentage that are adjusted for shot quality. That is to say, we have various stats out there that can take into account the shot location and things like rebounds and various other types of dangerous shots. And once you make those adjustments, both goalies improve to the largest extent of any active goalie, along with Louis Domingue of Arizona Coyotes. So, definitely, if you're a believer in the impact of shot quality on save percentage, then perhaps they are above average goalies, or at the very least, average goalies. But like I said, goaltending can be quite unpredictable.
When you take a look at the Flames' defense core, I know you're a big fan of their first pairing of Mark Giordano and Dougie Hamilton, two guys who both finished in the top eight in Norris Trophy voting. And TJ Brody is a guy who looked like he probably should look. And that's as, if not an elite NHL defenseman, a guy who's close to that level when the Flames traded for Michael Stone last season, but didn't look as good playing with some other partners. When you look at TJ Brody and the guy who's likely to be his new partner, Travis Hamonic, that will form the Flames' second pairing, how high do you think the ceiling is for that group?
Oh, I think it's quite high. I think that, as I mentioned a moment ago, it is true that Brody and Hamonic and and Stone do need to bounce back from disappointing seasons, but I believe in at least this case, Brody Hamonic, that they certainly will, because both of those two defensemen have a solid track record as strong second pairing defensemen, as strong top four defensemen before last season's disappointment. So I think certainly it's within the realm of possibility that not only would this be an above average second pair, but it might actually be among the best second pairs in the NHL.
Assuming everybody is healthy, Rob, we know who the Flames' top five defensemen will be. We know that Mark Giordano and Dougie Hamilton will be the first pairing, that TJ Brody and Travis Hamonic will be the second pairing, and that Michael Stone, who, to my surprise, came back after the Flames traded for Hamonic, will be half of the third pairing and will play on the right side. Who do you think will or should play on that third pairing with him? Because it looks like there's a battle for the 6-7 spots once training camp and the preseason rolls around.
Oh, well, you can make all the plans you want, but, you know, after the first few games, there's going to be an injury. I mean, there's going to be something that comes up, and the lineup's going to get all thrown open. So I don't know if it's necessarily that critical to engineer the exact right third pair. My preference has always been to put a young player there, to put someone who's developing, someone who has a higher ceiling. I mean, the safest thing is to put in someone who's, been an NHL regular, someone like Bartkowski. But I think it makes more sense to stretch a younger player into that role and see what they can do.
Some think that Brett Kulak should be that guy, but he is one of three restricted free agents that the Flames still have to sign between now and the start of the regular season, and hopefully sooner rather than later. I'll ask you about right now a guy who is at the top of that priority list, or at least he should be, and that's Sam Bennett. Coming off a down year statistically, but some think that Bennett, with the way he played down the stretch in the regular season and in four postseason games, is at a point in time where he is about to find his game and to find it consistently. Where do you sit on Bennett? How high do you think his ceiling is, and do you think this is the year that he becomes the player the Flames thought he would be when they took him fourth overall?
I think there's a good ceiling on Sam Bennett. I think in his prime, he could be a top-line player. He could be possibly even a two-way top-line player. Getting 70 points, I think that's a good level for his prime. He may not be there yet, but I think he can take a strong stride towards that direction. And it's something I think the Calgary Flames need. Last year, they had a very good performance from their second line, that backline for Leaf Tkachuk line. But quite frankly, the numbers weren't as favorable to their top stars like Gaudreau and Monahan. So if Bennett is able to move up and start pushing for a role on the top scoring line, that might help address one of Calgary's greater outstanding issues right now.
Rob Volman, author of Hockey Abstract and Stat Shot, also a columnist for ESPN and NHL.com, joining us on the South Street Burger Guest Hotline, voted Calgary's best burger 2 years in a row by listeners of Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Now serving local craft beer with daily specials. Visit southstreetburger.com. Rob, let's shift gears and go from the Flames to the Oilers. Your thoughts on the Oilers offseason so far?
Well, of course, the key thing, they got done, which was the Connor McDavid extension. I mean, quite frankly, he's a complete game changer. You could put Connor McDavid on virtually any team in the NHL, and he would completely transform them. And in fact, quite literally, that's what he's done in Edmonton. I mean, not only does he improve the team directly, but a lot of other people are willing to be part of the organization, far more willing to be part of the organization and sign extensions with Connor McDavid, locked down as a permanent member of that team. And so I think that just getting that extension done, and it also looked like he even signed for a bit of a discount. So everything else to me is secondary. The main thing is they lost Connor McDavid down long term, and he even managed to lock him down for less than maximum.
Yeah, it sounds strange, doesn't it, to say that Connor McDavid, who's got 2 years under his belt in the league and is making $2 million more per season than any other player, had signed a contract that looks like it's discounted. But that's the truth, isn't it? Because he could have walked in and said, listen, I want $15 million, which is the max, and I want it over 5 years. But he didn't. He took 12.5 over 8, and it does look like a bit of a bargain, doesn't it?
It's absolutely, in my mind, a huge win. The only thing that could possibly go wrong is if, of course, he were to get injured at some point. But, from where I stand, that was the critical move. That's the difference-making move. I've got these models that I built, using statistics and numbers and projections and age curves and regression and all these other factors. And even if you paid him the maximum, Connor McDavid is still one of the best value contracts in the NHL, despite being the most expensive.
What about Leon Draisaitl? He ends up getting an 8-year deal with an average annual value of $8.5 million per year. To me, Rob, it looks like a contract that's a little bit high today, but I don't think it's going to look a little bit high tomorrow. And when I say tomorrow, I mean 2 or 3 years down the road. How do you see it?
Well, in my view, I would have gone with the bridge because there's still a risk at this moment that Draisaitl is not what he appears to be. It's possible that, you know, he's being boosted by maybe some good puck luck or maybe boosted by the McDavid effect, and that in reality he's not an 80-point first-line player, and he might actually be more of a 50-point or a 60-point kind of second-line player, at which point, of course, this contract looks like a complete disaster. Now, if I'm wrong, and I'm probably wrong, I'm just saying there's a risk of that, not that that's what it is, just there's a risk of that. But if it's a bridge deal, and if it turns out he's perfectly fine, he's exactly what he appears to be, then in a few years you can lock him down. It might cost you a few more bucks, but at least you're eliminating that risk. As it stands right now, they're jumping in with both feet, and I think that's a little bit premature, but it is difficult when you're projecting a player's career statistically on just a couple of seasons worth of data. So that's why statisticians tend to be a little bit more conservative in these situations.
Before we move on from the NHL's two Alberta-based teams, I've got to ask you about probably the most polarizing player as far as how traditionalists look at him and people who really evaluate players based on advanced stats perceive him, and that is Chris Russell, the former Flames defenseman, signing a 4-year contract with the Oilers, AAV of $4 million per season. Your thoughts on Russell's first season at Edmonton, and do you like that contract that the Oilers gave him?
Well, you're right. That is a polarizing figure, and I think if there's any one attribute that seems to be valued far more by NHL front offices than by statisticians, it's shot-blocking ability. And if you believe shot blocking is important, then you probably love this deal because he is, quite frankly, the best shot blocking defenseman in the NHL. But it's not just him. A lot of the great shot blockers, a lot of the great so-called number four defensemen who really have terrible metrics really got great contracts this summer. He wasn't the only one. We saw Carl Alsner, for instance, cash in. So you're right. This is the type of player that where there's a divide between the statisticians and the front offices. Now, of course, I'm not claiming the statisticians are always right because we're not. But from our perspective, a player like Chris Russell isn't worth that kind of money. He isn't worth that type of contract because there's plenty of defensemen like him in the NHL. And also we don't see that same value attached to blocking shots. We prefer, you brought the puck out of the zone so there wasn't a shot to block in the first place.
Earlier, I mentioned that in Sportsnet's NHL offseason power rankings, who's improved the most so far? They've got the Flames at number one. You don't necessarily agree with that. So when you take a look at the other 30 NHL teams, Rob, who do you think has improved the most during this offseason?
What do you mean improved by making some moves and making some changes? Dallas would certainly be up there. There's several other teams that have made some interesting moves like Arizona. There's also some teams that are just going to be developing naturally just because of their young talent and their organization ready to hit the ice this coming season. Teams like Carolina and Philadelphia. So they might not have made any major wholesale changes, but they might be more improved just by having another season or another summer to actually develop their team and get more prospects into the lineup.
Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned the Stars because we're actually going to have their radio host, Owen Newkirk, on right after you. And I love the work that Jim Nill's done during the offseason. Goaltending's been their biggest problem. He brings in Ben Bishop, who, as the biggest goaltender in NHL history, should solve that problem both literally and figuratively. Mark Methot solidifies their blue line. They bring in Martin Hanzel and Alex Radulov up front. The Stars have missed the playoffs two of the last three seasons. Based on what you've said, Rob, I'm guessing you don't think that's going to happen again?
Yeah, I think what happened, they won the division, I think it was a couple of years ago. They might have gotten a little bit complacent, and they sort of ignored the gaping holes in their lineup, especially on the blue line. And of course, they paid the price for that. But I don't think, they're complacent any longer. I think, and I think you actually failed to mention their biggest improvement, which is behind the bench. Not that I had a problem with Lindy Ruff, but Ken Hitchcock is almost as good as it gets. And he's bringing a lot of experience to this team. And they paid a premium, actually, to bring in those players. They paid a lot of money to bring in Bishop and Methot and Hanzel and, and Radulov perhaps too much in some of those cases, but it does definitely address those holes. And as far as the blue line goes, you know, their organizational strength is already starting to come to bear. We saw that last season. This season we're going to see it even more. And yes, I believe Dallas is right back into the playoffs without hesitation.
Rob Volman joining us down the South Street Burger guest hotline, talking all things NHL, including the Battle of Alberta. And Elliot Friedman of Sportsnet reported yesterday when he was chatting with NHL Network that there are a number of teams that have discussed the possibility of signing the league's second all-time leading point producer, Jaromír Jágr, coming off a 46-point campaign as a 45-year-old with the Florida Panthers. In your opinion, Rob, why hasn't one of the 31 teams signed this guy yet?
Well, yeah, I've gotten that question a lot, and I'm only speculating here, but I have to assume it's because maybe he's asking for a substantial amount of money, or he's being a little bit, you know, selective and choosy about where he goes. The fact that he's played for Florida the past 2 years means it's not essential for him that he plays on one of the top Stanley Cup contenders. But maybe he's asking for a lot of money because, you know, if he was willing to play for $1 million, $1.5 million, he could pretty much play anywhere he wants. So I'm only speculating, but I think that has to be the reason, because every NHL team would probably want Jágr in the lineup.
Jágr, one of the greats of all time, and you've got a really interesting article up on NHL.com right now talking about Sidney Crosby and where he ranks statistically amongst the all-time greats. So fill us in on that article and how good you think this guy is.
Yeah, in fact, Jágr's mentioned that article because what I did is, of course, you know, Crosby turned 30 recently, and so I took a look at his numbers right up until now, age 30, and then I compared it to everyone else in history when they were 30. So I basically removed all their career accomplishments beyond that point and just tried to compare them age 30 to age 30. Now, the problem is kind of obvious is that, you know, these players throughout history played in a different era. You know, Maurice Richard and Gordie Howe played way back when, and Wayne Gretzky played in the high-scoring 80s. And for that matter, you know, Jágr's career has encompassed a broad range of different eras and times. And so the challenge was to actually find a way to statistically convert everyone's scoring data, at the very least, to a modern-day standard. And there's a few techniques for that. And once you do that, Gretzky remains on an island on his own at age 30. There's a bunch of people that are close to him, but he's really on an island on his own. And really the difference is that Crosby kind of stands alone apart from the rest of the pack with Mario and with Jaromír Jágr. So he's ahead of the Howardchuks and the Stashnys and the other names that you might come to your mind. And he's just right there shoulder to shoulder with Jágr and Mario as the only players that are basically that big step behind Gretzky.
Yeah, Sidney Crosby, no doubt, one of the greatest players in the history of the game. As far as who the greatest player in the game is today, who would get your vote?
I think I'm already prepared to say Connor McDavid. Now, if you wanted to be conservative and just stick with Crosby, I wouldn't argue with you. But in my mind, even last year, I remember being comfortable picking McDavid.
Interesting stuff, and kind of leads me into circling back to where we started with the Battle of Alberta. And you're a hockey statistician, but you're also a hockey fan. And like me, you grew up watching the Battle of Alberta. It's never going to be what it was back in the 1980s, but I believe that it could be great again. I like to call it the new Battle of Alberta because it's not going to be like the old Battle of Alberta. Do you think this is the year when it finally comes back for real?
Oh, boy, it's hard to say. I think Connor McDavid by himself certainly, you know, fulfills Edmonton's end of the bargain. And Calgary's certainly moving in that direction. But I also don't see them in a desperate race to get there overnight. It seems to me that they're trying to build something that's sustainable, that's going to make them competitive, like, long-term, as opposed to just trying to hotshot their way back into a Stanley Cup race. Whereas Edmonton, I mean, they're just trying to make as much hay as possible. While McDavid is healthy and is prime and everything like that. So it's possible that the two teams won't overlap, that Edmonton will peak first and Calgary will come along a little bit later. Hopefully there'll be some overlap there, but I think Edmonton's going to get there first.
Great stuff, Rob. And when the two teams do meet in a Stanley Cup playoff series, it'll be for the first time since 1991. And I think that's when the Battle of Alberta will officially be back. But looking forward to certainly a bunch of games between those two teams this season and lots more hockey talk with you. Before I let you go, an opportunity for you to tell our listeners about your new book. Where can they find it? What's it about?
Oh, yeah, well, thanks. It's called Hockey Abstract 2017. It's available if you go to hockeyabstract.com. You can order the electronic version, or there's a link that will take you to Amazon, which is the only place where you can buy the print version. And actually, if you prefer a French language version, we've got that coming out shortly as well in both print and digital format. That's called Le Précis de Hockey. So it's available right now. It's basically the statistical take on hockey. So if you've already got all your other books and magazines that give you the traditional view, that give you the view from the locker room, that give you the view from the experts, this will supplement that. This will complete the picture by giving you all the underlying numbers and what they mean. And of course, we always have a lot of fun with this book as well. So if you're just looking to smile and have a good time, that's a good reason right there to pick it up.
Good stuff, Rob. Thanks for taking some time to talk with us on this Tuesday. Look forward to seeing you at the rink sometime soon.
Absolutely. I'll see you later this season.
All right. Rob Volman, author of, a brand new Hockey Abstract, also Stat Shot. You can find him on ESPN and NHL.com as well. And if you visit the league's website now, Rob contributing on 31 in 31. So basically a breakdown of all 31 teams in the National Hockey League. You can find as much information as you want on the Flames and the Oilers and the other 29 teams as well. So I encourage you to check out Rob's stuff on NHL.com. And if you're into the advanced stats, hey, even if you're not and you're curious about them, pick up one of his books. Certainly the best way to go would be to pick up the brand new one, Hockey Abstract 2017.